Josephi's book probes one of the least known and most fascinating sidebars to the general history of the Civil War. However, the current-day reason to underscore how portions of the early West mixed northern and southern politics and population strains is that in many important ways, substantial born-again evangelicalism or fundamentalism, sectarian rather than mainline religion, political conservatism, and cultural individualism, the blending is ongoing. Responding to many different lures, Southerners and Southern inclinations and affinities continued to move westward during the late 19th and 20th centuries. Indeed, mining was the original draw for some Southerners, because the Dahlonega district of northern Georgia held the nation's best producing gold fields at the period prior to the California Gold Rush. At its peak in the 1830s, 15,000 miners were on hand there. By the 40s and 50s, they were looking for new opportunities. Indeed, Georgians from Dahlonega, meaning yellow money in Cherokee, discovered the gold in both the Cherry Creek and Leadville districts of Colorado. In Montana, Georgians striking it rich named Last Chance Gulch near Helena, and another, John Bozeman, blazed the trail bearing his name to the Montana goldfields. After 1865, Southerners took jobs not only in mining, but on the transcontinental railroads. Enough worked on the Union Pacific as it crossed Wyoming in 1867 to keep the pro-Confederate Frontier Index popular as the railroad's house organ. But the preeminent influx by the late 1860s and 1870s came with the cattle drives, mostly north from Texas, following the Chisholm, Goodnight Loving, Great Western, and other trails into Kansas, Nebraska, Montana, and Wyoming. These movements brought the cattle culture not just to the railheads, but into valleys near the Oregon Trail and the mountain pastures of the Rockies. Texans and Missourians came too. According to one regional history, many men who came up the Texas Trail to Montana during the great years of the Long Drive brought with them both longhorn cattle and their political allegiances. By the mid-1870s, Montana ranges were being grazed by once southern cattlemen all the way to the Canadian border. The Oregon Trail itself kept bringing Missourians to the Rockies and the Pacific Northwest. After 1863, pro-secessionists from a strip of western Missouri counties, put under martial law because of guerrilla strife and northern retribution, began heading west in large numbers. Of roughly 40,000 emigrants traveling west on the Platte River Road in 1864, about half were Missourians, many of them Confederate sympathizers. At the trail's end, draft dodgers and Missouri Democrats were conspicuous enough to make one Republican remark that the left wing of Missouri Confederate General Sterling Price's army was still encamped in the eastern part of Oregon, and that the Oregon Democracy generally were only a step removed from Price and Jefferson Davis. Within another decade, many Oregonians were joining the Southern Alliance, an agrarian radical group that operated through secret societies, excluded blacks, and used Klan-like rituals and paraphernalia. Toward the end of the 19th century, as the timber business began to migrate west to the spruce, cedar, ponderosa pine, and Douglas fir forests of the Pacific Northwest, eastern loggers came along. A substantial immigration from the southern Appalachian Mountains into the northwestern lumber districts had begun in the 1880s, reinforcing the southern and border stock of the earlier years. Logging centers in southwestern Oregon, Idaho, and Washington State were favored destinations. The 20th century saw the extension of the movement. Missouri and Texas became the second and third ranking states in number of migrants sent to California during the 1920s, and these inflows continued during the 1930s alongside Oklahoma and Kansas residents fleeing parched farms in the Dust Bowl. Giant federal works projects such as the Grand Coulee, Bonneville, Fort Peck, and Hoover Dams also beckoned the unemployed westward, as did the war industries and military installations that ballooned between 1941 and 1945. In Dixie Rising, Peter Applebaum profiled the huge migration out of the South between 1910 and 1960. Besides 4.5 million blacks, mostly bound for the urban North, some 4.6 million whites also left the South, principally for the Midwest and the West. So many Kentuckians, West Virginians, and Tennesseans went northward to the automobile and rubber plants of the Great Lakes states that most factory cities had their hillbilly hollows and little West Virginias. Ypsilanti, Michigan, close by Ford's huge Willow Run facility, was known as Ipsitucky. In Ohio, Dayton and Columbus had Appalachian neighborhoods, but the fiddle and revival capital was rubber-making Akron. In 1940, the Ohio Guide noted that over 60% of its people were of Southern origin. Plants in Southern Ohio brought in large numbers of strikebreakers from the Tennessee and Kentucky mountains, who grouped together in shantytowns named Happy Top and Gobbler's Knob.